Stop waiting for permission to start your business. Your idea is one step away, and Shopify can make it easy to make it happen. That's what we did at Crypto 101 and use Shopify to sell our book, and the rest is history. The thing I like about Shopify is it takes the scary part out of starting. You're not just sitting there trying to figure out a website, payments, checkout, inventory, all these little things that stop people before they even launch. When I think about building a storefront, the biggest thing is friction. You want someone to land on your page, like what you're selling, and be able to buy without getting stuck. That's where Shopify is huge. Shopify Checkout is built to help more customers finish their purchase. And when they come back, their details are already saved. One tap and they're done. The cool part is Shopify powers millions of businesses worldwide, from huge brands that you know, like Mattel and Gymshark, to small businesses just getting started. So whether you're building the next big brand or launching your first product, the infrastructure is already there. Once that part is handled, you can focus on the real work, building the brand, getting attention, and bringing people to your storefront so the business can grow. That moment when someone actually buys, that's when the idea becomes real. With Shopify, nothing stands between your idea and a real business, so go make it one. Start your free trial today at shopify.com/crypto101. That's a free trial at shopify.com/crypto101. August is a good time to clean up the closet a little bit. Get rid of the summer stuff that you didn't use, prepare for your autumn wardrobe, and upgrade the basics that you'll actually reach for every week. That's why I like Quince. They make fewer, better pieces that feel premium, but don't come with the luxury markup. For me, the piece I keep coming back to is the 100% European linen drawstring beach pants with the matching shirt. I love wearing them on beach vacations because they're easy, they're breathable, comfortable, and they look put together without feeling like I'm trying too hard. Throw them on during the day, wear them by the water, or dress up a little bit at night. That's the kind of staple I actually use because it has versatility. And that's really what Quince does well. They specialize in everyday pieces that work harder, like ultra-soft organic cotton tees and premium Magnolia and cashmere sweaters that can go from a casual workday to dinner out. If your basics are starting to feel worn out, Quince makes it easy to upgrade with premium denim and tailored chinos from just $60 with the fit, structure, and quality fabrics you'd expect from a luxury designer brand. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middleman, so you're paying for high quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a go-to for everything from hotel quality bedding and bath essentials to premium cookware and travel must-haves. Guys, you've been hearing it for so long now, how I tell you, you have to go to quince.com because the website is so fun for all the options that they have. It's a great website to go click around, and the prices can't be beat. Upgrade your everyday. Download the Quince app for app-exclusive offers. Go to quince.com/crypto101. Get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada and the UK too. That's quince.com/crypto101.
All right, everybody, we're back at the Out East Summit sponsored by the Tie. We're having a lot of fun. I've got a fantastic, distinguished guest joining me today, Chris Giancarlo, the former CFTC chairman. Chris, thank you for joining us on the show.
Bryce, really good to be with you on this beautiful day. After all this rain, it's a nice morning.
I know. We went from tornado warning yesterday to
nice breeze.
Beautiful sunshine.
Let's hope the breeze stays a breeze and praying. Not anything else.
Yeah, well, look, we've got a lot to unpack with you. You know, former CFTC chairman, you know, you've really, you know, helped the space. I think you're also known as Crypto Dad. So, you know, a lot of people think regulators, they make things really tough. You really helped open the doors for crypto. You wrote a book on it. So I want to, you know, get our audience a little acquainted with who you are, a little bit about what you've done at the CFTC before we kind of get into what you're doing now.
Yeah. So, you know, as you mentioned, people reference me as former CFTC chair, but I spent 30 years in private industry before going and built a company, GFI Group, that we eventually took public onto the New York Stock Exchange, a company that created marketplaces for market makers to engage in sophisticated trading of complex financial products called credit default swaps. So my background really is in industry and in markets. And so I took that with me when I served in government. I was honored to be nominated by President Obama and then reappointed by President Trump to serve as chairman of the agency. And I think what I brought to it was an approach that said innovation isn't something to be feared. It's something to be embraced.
Right.
That the whole point of regulation is to move with the times and to bring regulatory frameworks that suit the new innovation, not to hold back innovation, but to go with it. And I've got a new book coming out in October called The New Adventures of Crypto Dad.
All right, I like it.
In which I'm going to talk about where we left things at the end of the first Trump administration, where things seem to be going a little bit sideways during the Biden administration,
yeah,
and why we're now back to a regulatory environment that doesn't fear innovation, but actually looks to exploit innovation in a way that's consistent with orderly markets, that's consistent with proper regulation, but is not fearful of innovation, is actually forward-looking on innovation.
I love it. I think the subtitle of your Crypto Dad book, Recalling from Memory, is The Fight for the Future of Money.
Yes.
And I wrote a book called Crypto Revolution, Your Guide to the Future of Finance. And
yes.
So we got a little play there.
Yes.
Both revolutionary fighting in spirit. What are you fighting for the future of money for, right? Like, is it for...
Oh, such a great question.
Yeah, go for it.
That's
open up.
That's a great question. Because the promise of this innovation, it's a new wave of the internet, right?
Yes.
It's the internet doing to things of value what it's already done to things of information.
Amen.
Right? And what did the first wave of the internet do? It made information far more accessible to the common person, right?
Yeah.
It took information that was housed in libraries and encyclopedias and made it available on our mobile devices, right? Without a ton of intermediaries to get to it. This wave of the internet is doing the same thing with things of value. It's making it regularly accessible. Just think about stablecoins. Stablecoins allow people all over the world to opt into the monetary policy and the monetary system and the currency of their choice.
Bingo.
Rather than having it dictated to them by their government. So it creates a democratizing force. The reason why I call it the fight for the future is the question of whether it will truly be empowering for the average person,
yeah,
or whether new hierarchies will emerge, just as it did in the internet, right?
Yeah.
Now, if we want information, we go to YouTube, we go to AI. Is it really truly accessible to us, or is it once again controlled by new hierarchies?
Yeah.
And the same thing is the question here, is will we trade government surveillance of our financial transactions for big tech surveillance of our transactions?
Yeah.
That's really the question. I think the Genius Act, which legalized stablecoins, in many, many ways is a fabulous statement of American determination to be at the forefront of this innovation.
Yeah.
And yet, the Genius Act imposes the Bank Secrecy Act, which is a surveillance law. It's not about secrecy. It's actually about making
the
our
lack
information,
of secrecy.
The lack of secrecy, and imposes that on this new innovation.
Oh.
So two steps forward, are we taking two steps back or one step back? Where are we moving here? And those are the things I addressed in my yeah, first book, but certainly address in this new book.
I love it. Kind of just to double click on the concept of, you know, we're subjected to a monetary policy. In America, we're privileged. We're very privileged in crypto.
In fact, the French call it the
exorbitant privilege.
Exorbitant privilege. Exactly.
And so we get the, you know, best monetary policy. And a lot of people, when I talk to my friends, are like, crypto, like, what do we need Bitcoin for? That's what the Federal Reserve is for. But it's like, you know, you got a credit card, you got access to a mortgage loan officer, you have access to these, you know, borrow lend facilities, you could swap, you could open a brokerage account, you could get any ETF in the world. But guess what? You're in the top 10%. And there's a 90% of the other world who doesn't have access to any of that.
Well, let me
get, and that's what crypto's for.
Exactly. You know, the existing financial system, before we get into crypto,
yeah,
is all premised on one having credentialed identity.
Bingo.
If you don't have if you're just Joe from the other side of the mountain,
yeah,
you cannot access the existing financial system because you do not have credentialed identity.
Right.
You can access the cash system. You can access
a loan shark for 30%, you know,
right,
a month.
But you can do cash transactions as well, right?
Right.
You don't need identity to give somebody a $10 bill.
Bearer assets.
Right. But you can't access the current financial system, which is premised on that. The beauty of a tokenized, digitally tokenized system is we may get back to, a system that doesn't require credentialed identity unless governments step in and say, not good enough for us.
I know.
Because we want to know everything everybody's doing, so they impose a credentialed identity. And in a world of 8 billion people, where roughly 1.5 billion do not have credentialed identity,
yeah,
they're excluded from financial wherewithal.
Yeah. And their governments have these, policies that are way worse than anything that we think, especially with inflation. We think, okay, back in the Biden administration, we had 9% inflation. I remember that print. And everybody's like, oh my gosh, this is horrible. But it's like, look at Argentina, look at Zimbabwe, you know, hundreds of thousands of percentage points of inflation.
Right,
and
right price.
And so, yeah, it's just a crazy dichotomy. But I do want to dive.
And that's the big thing about stablecoins I think a lot of people miss. the ability to opt out of those inflationary environments and choose a financial monetary policy and currency of your choice.
Yeah.
You know what slows teams down more than anything? It's not always the headcount budget or even the tools themselves. It's when the way work gets done lives in someone's head and never actually gets documented. Then someone new joins, a new platform gets rolled out, or a teammate leaves and suddenly everybody's doing the same process in a different way. That's exactly the problem today's sponsor, Scribe, was built to solve. Scribe is a workflow AI platform trusted by 94% of the Fortune 500. It captures workflows as they happen and turns them into step-by-step documentation your team can review and share. You just do the process like you normally would, and Scribe builds the guide as you go, capturing every click, step, and screenshot automatically. With our team being remote, I have definitely had moments where I've had to explain the same setup or process more than once to a colleague, and it always feels like something that should have been documented the first time. With Scribe, what could take hours of writing and cleanup can be ready to share in under a minute. Scribe also automatically redacts sensitive information like names, emails, and account numbers from screenshots. Admins can enforce that across the team so nothing slips through the cracks. Plus, anyone following the process can get real-time on-screen guidance showing exactly where to click inside the actual tool. Scribe doesn't just document workflows. It uses AI to suggest ways to improve them, helping you spot redundant steps and opportunities to simplify or automate. To see what Scribe could look like for your org, head to scribe.how/crypto101 and mention Crypto101 for your first month of Scribe Capture free on select plans. That's Scribe, scribe.how/crypto101. Everybody is talking about AI right now, but the AI that actually matters is the kind that saves you time, helps you make smarter decisions, and takes work off your plate. And if you're running an e-commerce business, shipping is one of those things that can either keep you moving or completely slow you down. That's why I like ShipStation. It's an end-to-end order fulfillment platform built for e-commerce businesses, and its AI is trained on decades of real shipping data from billions of shipments across the world. So instead of juggling a bunch of different tools, ShipStation helps you stay in control. It can alert you when your stock is low, recommend the best carrier selections and rates, automate tasks, and help you save time as you grow. You also get inventory syncing across sales channels, automatic rate shopping, a branded returns portal, and integrations with accounting and CRM software, all in one place. If I were running an e-commerce store, this is exactly the kind of tool I'd want, because once the orders start coming in, you don't want shipping to be the thing that's holding you back. Over 1 million businesses have trusted ShipStation to optimize and scale their shipping. The sooner you switch, the sooner you start saving time and money. Get started with ShipStation today and get 60 days free at ShipStation.com with code crypto. That's ShipStation.com, code crypto. ShipStation.com, code crypto. Taxes and fees apply. I don't know about you, but dinner sneaks up on me all the time. I'll open the fridge and realize I have no protein ready. And at that point, I'm not trying to go to the store, make a last-minute grocery run, and gamble on whatever meats or burgers are left at the store. That's why Omaha Steaks is a great freezer move. It's like having a trusted butcher at home and quality protein when you need it the most. Omaha Steaks has earned its reputation with over 100 years. It's the same beef trusted in kitchens across the country, shipped straight to your door. Steakhouse quality without the steakhouse prices. Your family will think dinner took hours, but it didn't, just minutes. And if you never tried them, the Burger Perfection Flight is the perfect place to start. You get 20 premium steak burgers made from 5 different cuts of steak. 4 filet mignon burgers, 4 New York strip burgers, 4 ribeye burgers, 4 brisket burgers, and 4 sirloin burgers. Guys, this is the altcoin basket of burgers right here. If me and Brian were on the rundown, we would be divvying these up 50-50 because you know how we like to grill in the summer. So you're not just getting a box of burgers, you're getting different flavor profiles, different textures, and real steakhouse style variety you can throw on the grill or cook up fast during the week. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with the promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.
So I'm so curious just to, you know, this is a great honor to have you on the show and like just get inside the conversations that you have with some of your other buddies, right, in DC where you're working, some of your other buddies that you used to, you know, rub shoulders with in Wall Street. And they're like, Chris, you're really doing the crypto thing. Like, are they bought in yet? Is traditional you know, financial folks.
So look, I want to give a teaser to the audience for my new book, The New Adventures, because it has these conversations in it.
I need to read it.
I've set the
pre-ordering
scene,
it
in some of the White House meetings on this. I've set the scene for some meetings with other regulators, including during the Biden administration.
Yeah, sure.
And I think I get to what made them tick when they announced an army against an anti-crypto army and a war against crypto. I think I get what I also contain some real intimate looks at some of the characters of crypto. People like Sam Bankman-Fried, people like Shane Copeland, the inventor of
Polymarket. Yeah.
And so I encourage your listeners. But let me give you a flavor for what I think drove some of the antipathy to crypto during those Biden
years. Please do.
During the era on which I came into public life, the Reagan Revolution, which was based upon Milton Friedman and before that, the Austrian School of Economics, the belief was that in a society, the best way to allocate capital amongst members of that society was in a free market approach. That the market, albeit not perfect, would allocate capital in an efficient means. Well, coming out of the great financial crisis in 2008, an alternative philosophy that had been bubbling around, now came into full bloom, and that says actually the free market's done a bad job of allocating capital, especially to certain
dog got off the leash.
The dog got, and it didn't allocate capital to certain disenfranchised groups.
Sure.
And therefore, in order to get capital in an equitable fashion, or I might say an equity fashion, we need a political component. And in many ways, Dodd-Frank was the victory of Washington over Wall Street. Mm. What it said was, going forward, Washington's now going to have a say in allocating capital. And you see that whether it's dictating who serves on the boards of directors of financial firms or certain allocations of capital in banking relationships and others.
Just to interject here, it almost seems ironic because the subprime mortgage was a Clinton sort of effort to get in and to put himself in, say, you know what, we're going to do subprime loans, right? And that was kind of the reason.
Martin Frank saying, let's roll the dice one more time.
It's crazy.
Right?
The irony.
But the irony, right? Well, what crypto does is it challenges both the notion of letting the market allocate capital and letting Washington allocate capital. What crypto says is, if we get the algorithms right, we don't need to rely on individuals,
any
humans, right? We can allocate capital fairly in a way the algorithms don't recognize. Race, color, religion, et cetera, the algorithms will just allocate capital. And so crypto is, in a sense, Silicon Valley challenging Wall Street and Washington on how crypto, Silicon Valley broadly written, not just California. And so crypto is really a challenge to those. And what my new book goes into is, how is that going to resolve itself? What are we going to wind up with? Are we going to wind up with a reconsolidation of power in big tech? Or are we going to completely democratize the allocation of capital? But I think the reason why I call this the fight for the future of money, reminding you call it
The guide to the future of finance.
The future of finance. The question for everybody, I guess, for our audience is, how does this get resolved? What comes out of this? And I take a peek at that in my book by telling stories from the inside.
I love it. Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about prediction markets. I want to get your just high-level thoughts on prediction markets and kind of color it with, you know, the CFTC is taking a big role there. And how do you regulate these things? Because, you know, we've been having conversations all week about, you know, people can make a prediction market on anybody or anything. And is that person then responsible for knowing what's out in the prediction market and doing or not doing what a prediction market says? You know, insider trading on prediction markets. Like, what are your high-level views on this?
First of all, actually, I think the regulation piece is easy. That's the easy piece of this. We have long established, going back to the 1930s, that retail establishments are regulated at the state level. Markets are regulated at the federal level.
Okay.
Casinos and sports books are not marketplaces.
Right.
The house sets the price.
Right.
Okay. If you walk into a casino, you don't get to say, I'll tell you what the odds are. No, the house sets the odds. If you go in a sports book, they tell you what the odds are. You can take the odds, you can leave the odds, but you can't make the odds.
Okay. Interesting. Okay.
Those are retail establishments, those are regulated at the state level. Prediction markets are truly markets. The house doesn't set the odds, the house just puts forward a proposition.
Right.
The market participants set the odds. If you don't like the odds, you reset the odds. That's a marketplace that has to be regulated at a federal level, not just because that's what the law says, because that's the only thing that makes sense.
Sure.
Are we going to have 26 states regulate global marketplaces?
they're nuts.
They just don't have the ability. The CFTC has long regulated some of the world's biggest markets. The oil futures market is a global market, and the CFTC actively regulates it and efficiently regulates it. So the issue of whether these should be regulated federal or state is, to me, quite clear. If it's a market, it's federal. It doesn't matter whether it's a sports proposition, doesn't matter whether it's an electoral proposition, doesn't matter whether it's a price a proposition on the price of oil, the future price. If it's a marketplace, it's federal regulation. So to me, that's the easy part. What I would say is that, to me, these look a lot like Uber. When Uber came around, and ride sharing offered a challenge to ride hailing that was restricted by local monopolies, local taxi and limousine monopolies, airport monopolies, county monopolies. And what happened is the American people said, but I really like this ride hailing thing. And the fact that you tell me I can't get one from this airport, I can only get a ride hailing, means I'm going to go to a different airport.
Right.
And so after a while, those monopolies were broken down. And what do we have today? We actually have both ride hailing and ride sharing. They serve different marketplaces and they coexist.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see the same thing in prediction markets. The states and their casinos and their sports books have had at least the sports element to themselves. And they're saying, wait a minute, you can't do this because we're protected by casino and gambling commissions at the state and the county and the tribal level. And we're going to fight you all the way to Congress.
Right.
But what's going to happen is the American people are going to say, you know what? But we like this.
Yeah.
You can't take this away
from
us.
We want it.
We want it. And when that happens, these things are going to break down. And guess what? We're still going to have the casinos.
Yeah.
Because the casinos make 90% of their money on the one-armed bandits.
Yeah.
Okay? We're still going to have sports books because people like sports books. Yeah. They offer different parlays and other things. But we're also going to have prediction markets. And here's why we're going to have prediction markets. Because people want certainty.
Yes.
For the same reason that I checked the weather report today before coming to this thing, and I'm not wearing a raincoat because it's sunny out. People want predictability in where interest rates going, where are gas prices going. And these prediction markets have shown they've got about 90% accuracy.
Yeah, predictive power.
Which is the same accuracy as the weather report.
Yeah.
And so people are going to like this idea. And once they like it, they're not going to be held back by these local monopolies. And eventually the local monopolies are going to figure out, you know what, there's room for everybody.
Yeah.
They'll make their money. And so will prediction markets. And I think there's no turning back.
Yeah.
The question is whether the leaders of these organizations, these founders, these young founders that have built great franchises, have the ability, and not every founder does. I've seen this, you know, I took a company from almost startup to IPO. Not every CEO has the ability to both create a great idea, build a marketplace, and then transition into a public company CEO.
Keep things on the rails.
And I think we'll see how this evolves. But this product is not going away.
Yeah.
This industry is only going to grow. And we'll see how the leadership evolves to grow with it.
And CFTC will remain the regulator.
Absolutely. CFTC is a very good regulator.
Yeah.
I mean, I would argue to you, as important as the stock market is, far more important is the interest rate bond markets, U.S. Treasury futures markets. So far more important is the dollar-based oil market.
These are the bedrocks of
the bedrocks of the dollar's finance. Primacy as the world's reserve currency, and they're all regulated by the CFTC.
Yeah.
And by the way, in 2008, not a single CFTC-regulated entity failed.
Wow.
Right? How many in the SEC world things failed?
Many.
Right. So the CFTC knows what it's doing. It's a very good agency, and I think it's going to do just fine.
Awesome. Yeah, I completely agree. And I was going to end with this question, but I'm going to bring it forward because it's relevant to the conversation we're having right now, and I got so many more in my head. So
we'll do it again, Bryce.
Yeah, exactly. It's great. Look, so prediction markets, predictive accuracy, Clarity Act odds have been, you know, start of the year, 80%. You know, I'm going here. Now they're 30% yesterday. Today they're 40%. So it seems like the market doesn't have a good grip really on what it's doing, on what's going to happen. There's three kind of hangups: the ethics, you know, the yield and the DeFi provisions. I don't want to put you on the spot with saying, is it going to pass? Is it not going to pass? But I just want to open it up for you on your general thoughts. When you talk to clients, when you talk to, you know, people, how do you frame the Clarity Act? Is this happening?
Or? You know, I've been rubbing the hell out of my crystal ball for the last few weeks, and it's all rubbed out. So
No prediction.
Here's what I would say.
Just some commentary.
It doesn't matter as much as people think. Okay. I think if anything, we've made too big of a deal.
That's a hot take. I like that.
If the Clarity Act doesn't pass, the world goes on. The internet changed the world in the last 30 years, and there was no authorizing statute.
Okay? Oh, I didn't know that.
Right. If we don't get a Clarity Act, these innovations are going to happen anyway.
Yeah.
First of all, Wall Street is all in. There's no turning back on what DTCC is doing,
right.
what Franklin Templeton is doing. All of this is going to go forward, whether Clarity asks or not. Mike Selig at the CFTC and Paul Atkins at the SEC are not going anywhere.
Yeah, I feel like they've got stuff loaded in the hopper.
Oh, man, they're going to stay until the last day of the Trump administration. We've got 2 more years of this to run, more than that. They're going to do what they're going to do, whether Clarity passes. This is not going away. And if the pendulum fully swings for 2 years from now, and suddenly Elizabeth Warren is going to be president, she's not going to rip this out of the ground. It's going to be too built in.
Yeah.
In fact, her wing of the party has already moved on from anti-crypto to anti-AI.
Yeah.
The Luddites have found a new target for their desire to stop all progress. It's now AI. Crypto is too ingrained.
Yeah.
So all of this is going to happen. Builders out there, keep building. If this doesn't pass, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
The world goes on. The third wave of the internet is coming. It's here. It's not going back.
Yep.
We're already moving on. So I hope it passes. I think there's some good things in it. One of the things that's in it is the grounding in law of something I started at the CFTC, which is Lab CFTC.
Right.
Which is I think every federal regulation, every federal regulator, whether it's finance or technology or agriculture, ought to have a lab inherent in it for innovation.
With experts.
With experts. So I hope this passes. There's a lot riding on, but at the end of the day, it's not the end of the world if it doesn't, and it very well may not pass.
Yeah.
And we'll be back here next year talking about all the new innovations that are coming, whether it passes or not.
Totally. This is great. You kind of hit on Wall Street. That's where I want to take things next, because Morgan Stanley's here, Fidelity's here, Invesco's here, Templeton sponsored this.
Canton is a sponsor.
Exactly. And so we've got so many Wall Street heavy hitters, and they're all here, but they're not talking about crypto. They're right. talking, and we've had conversations in these seats, they're talking about digital assets or tokenization. And so I wanted to kind of get your thoughts.
Crypto is a loaded phrase.
Right.
So it's smart to replace it with digital assets. I use crypto as the shorthand for all of, basically.
For all of it.
For digital networks of value with tokens on those networks, right? But what we're seeing right now is crypto moving away from a funky new alternative asset class into crypto is really architecture,
right.
architecture for the financial system. There was a time, you're too young to remember, I'm old enough to remember, when all photographs were on film. And you took a photograph and you showed it to your friends and there it went into a photo album and you never looked at it again, right? Now you take a photograph and it lives. You can do things with it. You can post it to social media. You can send it to your parents. You can change it. You can do things with it.
Certainly.
It lives on your phone. Every time you go out, you show people these photographs. Photography was changed by an internet, by moving it from a single analog photograph onto a digital network.
Yep.
That's just a microcosm for what's going to happen with value. Your things of value are going to move out of some bank vault. Now, onto your mobile device, you're going to be able to do things with them. This innovation, this revolution, this new architecture is very, very powerful. We're going to look back 15 years from now and say, it's changed everything, and it is going to change everything. So, folks, don't get too hung up on whether Clarity passes or not, because it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It'll matter in the short term. It'll make the United States fully ahead of the rest of the world. But ultimately, this wave is coming. There's no turning back.
Yeah. Are people ready for it? Are people ready for the responsibility of self-custody? Are they ready to, remember their seed phrases and not rely on, their middlemen?
Well, probably many are not. But here's the beauty. You'll now choose to have a middleman.
Yeah.
As opposed to be forced to have a middleman.
That's beauty.
So if you want to do it yourself, you can do it yourself, which you could never do before. If you want to move money yourself, you can do it. I recently bought some wooded farmland up in Vermont.
Oh, lovely.
And thank you. And I was in New York in that morning for a meeting. I called my banker at 9:00. I said, the deal's closed. Wire the money.
Yeah.
At 2 p.m., I'm still getting calls from the lawyer in Vermont and the seller is sitting there waiting for their money to arrive.
Right.
And it's ridiculous. And, we're chasing. Where'd the wire go? That's the system we have today.
It's a nightmare.
In the same time zone. Imagine trying to move that money to Tokyo or trying to move it to Singapore. You know what it's like, 3 days if you're
for sure.
In the future, that money, I would have moved in a second. Yes. I would have said, we're closed, boom.
Here's the TXID.
Done.
Done. So, it's in your wallet.
So this is going to change everything we know about how we record, who owns what,
yeah,
and who's transferring what to whom.
That seems like what it's really, what the Wall Street guys that I'm talking to are all really excited about is saying, look, Bryce, we have five guys that are reconciling, and then their five guys are reconciling. We're sending, passing back and forth spreadsheets. You know, we're checking the tape. It's like, at the end of the day, you're going to be able to settle T, you know, on the day.
Yes.
There's no T plus one, T plus two. And that's a really, really powerful concept.
You know, whenever you go from analog to digital, you leave behind those physically required tolerances and gaps.
Yeah.
And in a digital system, you choose your own tolerances. So we may choose to go 23/7. We may choose to go 23/5. We may choose to go 24/5, but we can choose that.
Yeah.
Do you know why the standard settlement time for a securities transaction used to be 3 days?
I don't.
Because standard delivery of U.S. mail was 3 days.
You got to be kidding me.
No. So we chose
the mail stock certificates and stuff.
We chose to settle our securities transactions based on the limitations of putting them in the mail and sending them.
That's crazy.
Right? So our system, our architecture was built upon physical limitations.
Wow.
Once we go to a digital system, we're no longer bound by those physical limitations. Now, we may choose a 1 hour break at the end of the day, but we choose it.
Yeah.
And the same thing is true about people's custody of their things of value. You may choose to have a middleman who knows your seed phrase, it can give you the password if you forget it and all those things.
Yep.
But you're not required to do it because of physical limitation.
Yeah.
You can choose to do it yourself. That's the democratizing power of this technology.
I love it. Well, you've been very generous with your time. I've got one final question. It's another hot topic, perpetual futures, yep, right? I know this is directly in your lane. You were actually residing in 2017, December, when the Bitcoin futures contract first, yep, started trading on the CME. And so now we've got these new products called perpetual futures. They're basically like futures that just never have a role.
Yeah.
They never expire. And, you know, I'm curious, are you a fan of these? Do you think, I mean, I'm sure that there's so many.
A perfect example of what I was saying before. The reason why futures markets had a settlement date is because they came out of the grain markets. And at some point, the grain was in the barn.
Yeah, and it had to move.
And at some point, the growing season was over. The volatility was over. Now the grain could be sold. And so you had a price, okay? So the notion of
dated
futures grew out of the physical limitations of physical delivery.
But those don't stop, right? They're still going to be, we still have physical limitations. So do perpetual futures fit that?
They can't. So yeah, we will have both physically settled markets. We will both have cash settled markets. We will both have end date markets. And we will have, for those who choose it, to have perpetual.
Got it.
End date markets. The CFTC can regulate this. It's not complicated. I mean, it from a surveillance point of view, it presents new challenges. CFTC's got this.
Yeah.
This is
new challenges.
And there's nothing in the CFTC's laws or regs that require an end date.
Yeah.
So there's no reason why they can't do it. The issue is going to be around, what do you do about retail? How do you provide retail? As they always are. And another reason why this has to be regulated at the federal level. You need one set of regulations. You can't have 26 or 28 or 35 or 50 different states regulate this. Has to be done. Yeah. And the CFTC has got the expertise to do it.
I'm excited for this future.
No biggie.
Yeah, no biggie. No sweat off Mr. Seelig's back.
He's got it.
Mr. Giancarlo, thank you so much for your time. You've been very generous. Everybody who is watching here at the Audi Summit, stay tuned. We've got some more great guests coming. And enjoy the rest of your trip.
My pleasure. It's good to be here.
Yeah,